Welcome to EJB Talks, Rutgers Blaustein School experts in policy, planning, and health, where we talk with our faculty and staff experts, as well as students, about how the fields of public policy, urban planning, public health, health administration, and public and urban informatics affect your lives. Welcome to EJB Talks. I'm Stuart Shapiro, the Associate Dean of Faculty at the Blaustein School, and the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work my colleagues and our alumni in the fields of policy, urban planning, and health are doing to make the world, the country, and New Jersey a better place. Today, we wrap up season 5 of this podcast, and rather than have one of my esteemed colleagues as a guest, given that we are near the one-year mark of the Biden administration, Amy Cobb is going to come across from the other side of the glass, as she has done on occasion, and the two of us are going to talk about the first year of the Biden administration. Amy, welcome back.
It's been a while, but I think you and I were saying, isn't that exciting that it's been a while since you and I have had to have a politics talk?
Yeah, no, during the Trump administration, there was something to say every week. There was major developments every week. And, you know, say what we will about Biden, and we'll talk quite a bit about it. But, you know, he promised to return some calm to our political processes, and I think he succeeded in that.
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's also not exciting because you're not on as much. So,
well, we'll let the viewers decide that.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So you spoke about it. We're almost a year into the Biden administration. I can't believe it. I'm going to leave the general how are they doing to the end. Mm-hmm. I want to speak about a few general pieces. So the big elephant in the room right now, that's been the elephant in the room for almost 2 years, COVID. How is the Biden administration doing in its response versus what it had promised? What do you think about the vaccine requirement, that using the OSHA standard? We haven't talked about it. Let me know what your opinions are on what they're doing.
Sure. So the Biden administration, I think, you know, has obviously in rhetoric been a huge improvement on the Trump administration. We're not hearing about quack cures anymore. We're not hearing about, you know, it's going away, it's not a problem, any language like that. And that in and of itself is obviously a significant improvement. Yet here we are. But now 21 months into the pandemic, and
yes, you know, believe it or not,
I know. And just last week, we have a new variant, or 2 weeks ago now, we have a new variant come in, the Omicron variant. And this points out a couple of things. I mean, first of all, and most importantly, it points out that at the end of the day, the control that the government and the political processes have here is not complete. It's not as if Biden can wave his hands and make the virus go away. And then second, you know, there are some failings in the Biden administration. We don't have nearly as much testing as we should have. That in particular, I think, has been a gap. It was a gap that obviously started under the Trump administration and has not been rectified. So that's a challenge. But there is a lot that's out of Biden's control, including the considerable anti-vaccination sentiment, which has left us more vulnerable to COVID than we should be at this point. I mean, I don't think even under a best case scenario, COVID would be gone right now, but things would be a lot better if more people were vaccinated. Now, you mentioned the OSHA vaccine mandate, and that's in my wheelhouse because that's a regulation. And so the approach the Biden administration took, and it had several components. There's also a regulation from the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services on the vaccination of healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. There's requirements that federal contractors be vaccinated. And of course, there's the most high profile, the OSHA mandate, that employers with more than 100 employees require that their workers either be vaccinated or be tested regularly. We should be clear, it's not really a vaccine mandate. It's a vaccine or testing mandate. The regulation is currently being held up in court. A court has stayed it pending legal arguments. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. There are some legal vulnerabilities associated with the vaccine mandate. I don't want to get into too technical details, but the decision to restrict it to employers of 100 people or more. It's hard to argue it's an emergency if you are excluding a significant portion of the workforce, and a few other issues along those lines. That said, there's also a possibility that the court will defer to OSHA on the standard and let it go into effect. But timing's obviously important. If this drags on in the court for 9 months, which it very well might, and the mandate is stayed for that entire time, then by the time we hit 9 months from now, you know, things will be very different. Vaccination rates will be higher. Maybe the virus will be certainly, at least in the developed portion of the world, less lethal. And who knows, you know, by that time, whether or not a mandate will even be needed, and the court may use that. If we could get it into effect now, it would have a real difference. It would be, it would save lives and keep people healthier. But the legal process has to play out first.
Okay, that's an eh for the Biden administration.
Yeah, I mean, I think you give them an eh, but an eh understanding that, you know, not everything's their fault.
So if you were grading them, it would be a C on a curve.
Well, you know, it's graduate school, so a B. But it's, you know, Biden has a dilemma here. And yes, Trump faced it too, although he obviously handled it badly. He's going to be held responsible for whatever happens with the virus, whether or not he does anything about it. You know, and so if things get better a year from now, people are going to give Biden credit, even if he doesn't deserve credit. If things get worse, they're going to blame him, even if he doesn't deserve blame.
That's the problem when you're the chief.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so we'll walk away from COVID for a little bit, and
if only we could. But yes.
I know. We'll think about it less. How about that?
There we go.
I'd like to move a little bit to the economy. One piece that I saw as a potential big win for the Biden administration, and I think you probably do too, is the Infrastructure Investment Jobs Act was a win, and although it didn't include the Build Back Better framework, which I think they had really touted for a while as the two pieces that went along. How do you feel about that win? Do you think it was the right thing to kind of back off on the second piece? And what other pieces of the economy and the outlook are you feeling are good or bad for the Biden administration?
Well, let's be clear. I don't think they've backed off on Build Back Better. I mean, it passed the House. It's going to come up for a vote in the Senate soon. The Senate will pass a different package than the House passed, and then they will go to conference. They will reconcile it, and something will eventually be passed. And really, I think in everyone's mind, even though they're in separate bills, those two pieces of legislation, the infrastructure bill and the Build Back Better bill, will together be the Biden legacy of this, the first year of this administration. I don't know what Build Back Better will look like when it's finished. It will look like less than the House passed, but certainly a very, still very significant piece of legislation in all likelihood. And both bills, I think, together are, you know, a good thing. They address needs in the economy, the need for infrastructure, the need for broadband, the need to fix roads and tunnels, universal pre-K, child care tax credits, child tax credits. All of these things fill significant needs in the current policy landscape in this country. And so all great. The idea, however, that they will make major differences in the economy in the short term is a mirage, though. You know, you pass a bill, everyone's like, oh, great, you know, but, you know, you know, and you've you've mentioned this on occasion, you know, implementation has to happen after the bill passes. And in the case of infrastructure, that takes years, right? And that will be...
Yes, I was working on this 20 years ago.
That's right. And there will be cost overruns, there will be scandals, there will be all sorts of stuff that come out of that. We should just steel ourselves for that and prepare for that. And then something like, you know, the child tax credit works faster if and when, you know, obviously that's in place right now, and the Build Back Better bill, I believe, extends it. That has a quicker impact, but even that, it's not immediate. So, I mean, I think the Biden administration, in focusing on these long-run needs, is doing the right thing from the a policy standpoint, but it's not doing something that sort of is necessarily politically successful for it, right? Because the economy, like COVID, runs on its own time frame, and people vastly overestimate the amount of power that the government has to change that. Indeed, unemployment has come down to 4.2% as of last week, a huge drop from the previous year. Did Biden do that? Well, most of that's recovery from the pandemic, right?
And right. So, but we're not going to complain if that is a positive. That's
no, that's absolutely right. But there's, you know, but the other problem is, you know, if you're going to give Biden credit for that, which I don't think he deserves.
Right.
You're going to give him blame for inflation, which I don't think he deserves either. And so, you know, right now the economy is a net negative for the president. And it's a net negative because when you drive down the road, the biggest thing that you see is gas prices, right? They're big neon letters, you know, every 5 miles or so, you see three or four gas stations all next to each other, and you see $3.50 a gallon or $3.70 a gallon. I was out in Arizona last week and it was over $4 a gallon. So it's, and inflation, you know, is a political nightmare for an administration. And as long as we continue to see prices going up, and I saw it in my grocery bill this weekend too,
yes.
It's not just gas prices. As long as people see that, they are going to feel economically uncomfortable, even as unemployment goes down, even as the labor market continues to improve. The supply chain issues, which are largely driving inflation, along with an increase of demand for goods, are going to keep prices up. Now, that will probably change. The Fed in particular has signaled that it's going to likely decrease interest rates. And or increase interest rates, excuse me, and that will curb inflation, but that's going to take time. And as long as that's a problem, the grade for the Biden administration, even more unfair than the grade on COVID, is going to have to be mixed because people do not feel economically confident or secure right now.
Yeah, I can tell you that grocery bill every week keeps going up.
Yeah.
And that's a tight squeeze. And at this time of the year, it's you can really feel it even more.
Yep.
So, that's a low C. Okay.
Again, graduate school. I think we got to go with the B there.
So this has been all over the news, especially the last few days. They were specifically talking about Texas, but this is a federal issue, is the voting rights bills that are going through, and a lot of the gerrymandering of districts, although Texas doesn't want me to say it that way, the reconceiving of voting districts across the country. And the Biden administration, you know, part of their policy agenda is equity. And one of their big pieces of it is voting rights and the voting rights bill. And I haven't really heard a lot about what they're doing right now. I know everybody has really been focusing on the economy and on COVID, but this was a big promise and a big part of their policy agenda. What's going on with this, with the Biden administration?
No, I mean, in the long run, this is probably one of the most important things that's going on right now. And we'll get to where the GOP is in a minute, which is one of the reasons it is one of the most important things going on right now. Throughout the country, states, particularly those under unified Republican control, are doing everything they can to maximize their chances of victories in elections throughout the decade. That includes gerrymandering, which you referred to. By and large, gerrymandering is now legal under the Supreme Court decisions of the past decade. And so I would not hold out much optimism there. There are a few cases, and Texas may indeed be one of them, North Carolina also a significant possibility, where gerrymandering will be found to be too extreme along racial lines. That is the one ground on which you can overturn a district. By a districting plan by a legislature. But political gerrymandering, the Supreme Court's not going to interfere with. And so where you have states like Wisconsin and Ohio, where the parties are relatively closely divided, yet the representation in the state legislature and the state's congressional delegations are very lopsided, that's going to continue. That said, there are pieces that we could theoretically deal with on the federal level. Most importantly are changes to the Electoral Count Act. If you remember January 6th, and that's still less than a year ago, and so I don't think any of us have forgotten it yet. The hope among the Trump supporters was that the vice president would halt the count in Congress and return it to the states. Reforms to the Electoral Count Act that would make that clearer, the process clearer, that the vice president doesn't have that power, that Congress doesn't really have that power, are very, very important. Reforms that ensure that states cannot ignore the will of the voters by staffing offices like the Secretary of State within states and other positions like that, and giving them the power to overturn elections, also critically important as we head into 2024 in particular, but even some of the gubernatorial and senatorial elections in 2022 could be affected. So I don't think we're going to see fixes on gerrymandering, at least until the court changes, which is a long, long time away. But that doesn't mean there isn't important stuff to do. Now, Congress is considering measures along these lines. But right now, there's no GOP support for those measures, which means it comes down to the filibuster in the Senate. So any changes along these lines are going to have to require a change in rules in the Senate. And can you get Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema to agree to that? You might. You actually, for those limited cases, you might be able to get that support, but I don't know. That will linger into 2022. That's not getting resolved this month, but it's one of the most important policy questions out there as we head into the new year.
And boy, that just heads into this next part of our discussion. I hate saying it. We're back to Trump. Look, here we are. It's like full circle. What do you think? How do you think the Biden administration is handling Trump and the GOP? And what do you see on the horizon with them?
Well, the Biden administration can't do anything about Trump for the most part.
I don't know if the Republican Party can do anything about Trump.
Yeah, well, that's the most important political development of 2021. There were those, and I don't think I count myself among them, but there were those that hoped that Trump would lose and then he'd go away. And the Republican Party could go back to being the Republican Party that it was pre-Trump, which, depending on your views, was either a good thing, a bad thing anyway. You know, obviously, many people have different feelings about that. But the reality is that has not at all been the case. And it's not because of the politicians. It's because of the voters. It's because of the people. Trump still maintains a huge base of support within the Republican Party. And it has become clear that you cannot win a Republican Party primary and defy the former president. And that influences the behavior of the vast majority of those in the House and Senate in the Republican Party. Not all of them. There are courageous people like Liz Cheney and Adam Kitzinger and occasionally a few others. But by and large, if you want to stay in power, you have to kiss Trump's ring. That has not changed in the Republican Party, and it's become worse. And that's critically important as we head into 2024, which we're not heading into yet. It's a little early to start thinking about
2024. We still have to get to the midterms.
Let's get through the midterms.
Which is already giving me palpitations because that's not that far away.
That's right. And it means, as far as the midterms are concerned, it means that Republican candidates are far more likely to be Trumpists than they are to be never Trumpers. And so that's what the midterms will hold in at stake. And to some degree, that improves the chances for Democrats, particularly in some key Senate races like Ohio and Georgia, where Democrats might have trouble against a traditional Republican in what's going to be a very difficult midterm for them. Mm-hmm. But they may have a chance against a Josh Mandel in Ohio or a Herschel Walker in Georgia. Obviously, then it has implications for the presidential primaries in 2024. But the fact of the matter is the Republican Party, even more than it was a year ago, stunningly, is the Trump Party right now. And those that hope that that would not be the case, I think, have been seriously disappointed. It also points to the importance of getting these reforms in place to make sure that the 2024 election and the 2022 elections are fair and the will of the voters is reflected.
So that's a good turn into what you're hoping that Congress can do before they adjourn right now to get that started or done.
So, I mean, I think, you know, there's not much Congress can do for the short term, but like I said, the big thing for the long term is pass the Build Back Better bill, or at least make significant progress towards passing it so that it can be taken care of. They're also going to have to deal with the debt ceiling likely before they recess. There was a 2-month extension on it in October that will run out the middle to the end of this month, and that's always a circus. I don't think it will. There's any chance that it will not be passed. Not passing it would indeed crater the economy. But it will take up bandwidth. It'll take up media time. It'll take up all of those things in the halls of Congress. So dealing with that and moving on Build Back Better.
Say it five times fast there.
Yeah. Build Back Better are the key priorities for Congress before they adjourn. And then when they come back, dealing with some of these voting rights issues. If we get that, that's a reasonable record for the first year of the Biden administration. It's not, like I said, it's not going to change COVID. It's not going to change the economy in any short-term way. But it's good policy.
Just as a concluding minute or two, how do you think the Biden administration is doing? What pratfalls do you think stick out the most, and how do you think they've recovered from those and are moving on?
So I think President Biden would be the first to say that he's a workhorse, not a show horse, right? He and we are in an era when, you know, show horsing is important. And so when things happen, like 5% inflation, when a new variant of the virus comes out, the Biden administration just plods along. And that's probably what they should do. I think from a policy standpoint, the administration has been largely fine this year. Exceptional, no, but fine. And they will be largely fine next year. But in difficult times, fine doesn't win you elections, and particularly midterm elections. And so, I don't want Biden to be more like Trump by any means. But the Democrats were likely going to lose if, you know, some hybrid of John F. Kennedy and Barack Obama was president. And so I don't pin that on Biden. But to a fair degree, I think next year the candidates in races for the House and the Senate and governorships are on their own, and they're going to have to win their elections with hard-fought battles, because the conditions aren't there for anything else right now.
Well, That, yay. Maybe this is why we stopped doing these, Stuart.
Ah, come on. It wasn't that bad.
I know. I think I like the fact that we haven't had to talk about this because it's made a lot of sense to me and what's going on and how they're plotting along. But, you know, I'm an implementation person. You're a regulation person. We love this stuff. And I think it doesn't always make great sound bites for television. So
that's for sure. So I will I'll wrap up here by thanking Amy for asking <You're welcome. laughs> excellent questions today, and thanking Karen Olson behind the scenes for helping out there. We're going to take the winter break off right now. We'll be back in January with season 6 of the
2022 EJB. Stuart.
2022. The EJB Talks podcast will return then. Until then, I hope everyone listening has a wonderful holiday season and a happy new year. And we can't wait to talk to you in the new year.